Right, and let's hear your lovely voices for a start.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen or the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. When none deceive another, or despise any being in any state, let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, wishing upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, everybody's here to do some meditation tonight, I hope. The newcomers, just one advice. We meditate to become happier and calmer, so whatever happens during the meditation, the worst thing you can do for your own mind is to cause your stress. And if you're not used to sit on the ground still that long, that's also no problem. You can always move. Just try not to make too much noise. And please don't sit with pain if you're sitting on the ground and on the chair as well, because the mind is gonna remember that meditation is something painful. And so sooner or later then the mind doesn't want to meditate anymore. So from the very beginning we should always look out that the body is as comfortable as possible. And it's a bit of a pain anyway having that body, so we're trying to make it comfortable, but there's only a certain amount that we can do. There's always a limit to it. So that is to not to go completely cold into the meditation. It's nice to try to bring up some positivity in the mind, huh? And I'm trying to do that with you during the meditation. We're just keeping in mind we're not causing ourselves any unnecessary stress. Just whatever happens may happen. And we're just going to sit, have the eyes closed, and if you like you can stay with your breath, and other people can stay with their mantras or wherever they want to go. or their kasinas, or their body contemplation. So you all have your own tricks, the guys who meditate for a longer time, and you know where you like to hang out most. I just give a little bit of a guidance in a certain direction, and I hope you can at least keep that direction a little bit, because I think it's very important that you maintain a beautiful attitude in your mind. For me, that's the key to any success in the meditation, that the mind is happy where it is. And that's when the five senses are not interested in running around anymore. They don't want to look at beautiful sights. The ears are not so interested in the sounds anymore. And the perception just centers more and more on that feeling, on that beauty that is hopefully developing in your own mind and spreading through your body. So a little bit of body awareness is very good in meditation. The body always tells us when we're tensing up. And so by relaxing the body at the beginning, we also give the mind a chance to relax. So like I said, just for the beginners, if you want, maybe today you can just follow me. I'm going to stay with the breath meditation. I'm not trying to focus it there. I'm just, if the mind doesn't know where to go, you can always come back to the breath. You will figure out that there's going to be sounds coming in. You get more aware of sounds next to you or outside. Then the mind is obviously with the sound for a few seconds. And then if it wants to stay there, let it stay. If it doesn't know where to go, go back to the breath. The only thing we don't want to do today, where we want to restrain the mind a little bit, is about the past and the future. We would like the mind to appreciate that time, this half an hour that we meditate, to stay here with these nice people in this room. For this half an hour. But if you see it drifting into the future, you're just aware, okay, drifting into the future of mind. But that is not the problem. Usually it's when we find interest in that future. That seems to be really important. And then there's something that grabs that thought and makes it important, lifts it up, and then it becomes stronger, and then sooner or later you will have completely forgotten why you're sitting here. You're just basically in the old habit of figuring out what you're going to cook tomorrow, or I don't know, whatever. And the same is with the past. If something important comes up from the past, doesn't matter at all. There's nothing important there. There's all past stuff in that half hour. So we acknowledge it friendly if something is coming up, but see if the mind is trying to grasp and hold on and proliferate about it. And maybe you can do something about that, and just we gently remind the mind, we don't have to figure out anything now. We can just stay for this half an hour here with these people, with the feelings we have in our body, with the sounds that are in this room, with that temperature, with those smells, with those sensations. And if you kindly can bring your mind back to that, that is a great and beautiful effort. And hopefully it will give you some rest and peace, and you find a little bit of this, I don't have to think the whole time. This little bit of space in the mind where there's some ease. Are there any questions that need to be answered before we start? No? All right. Okay. Can somebody take care of the lights, please? Then we just go ahead. like I said, make yourself comfortable on the chair. Make sure that your butt is comfortable on the chair, that your back is not too far away, not too close. Your legs are not too far away, not too close, not too close together, not too far apart. Wriggle around and see that you find a position where you don't have to hold anything up. Where you see you have a chance for sitting relatively still for half an hour, and you know you're not going to damage anything and the body is going to be alright. Even if it's not 100% comfortable, but the body will be completely alright. But that doesn't mean that you can't move. If you have to adjust later on, no problem at all. Go ahead. So we just go once through the body and see if your toes are relaxed and wriggle them a little bit. Let's see if they step nicely on the ground. Obviously the people sitting on the ground do it a little bit differently. They can also wriggle and see if their cross legs are comfortable, if their back is in a comfortable position. And of course most of the people are sitting on the chairs. I do the thing for the people sitting on the chair, and you on the ground just do your best to accommodate that to your position. So now go up to the knees, and the knees nicely in a nice distance apart from each other. Go up through your thighs. Are your thighs relaxed? And if your feet are relaxed and comfortable on the ground, then the thighs have a better chance already to let out the tension that is in there. Because it should be in a position where nothing needs to be held up. No muscles that have to be active. So now see if you can breathe properly. That needs space in the area where your belly should come out when you breathe in. Should be space there when you take a deep breath, that nothing is holding that back. And here it's completely okay to open the top button of your trousers as long as you leave them on. If you breathe a little bit deep into your belly, you also feel your shoulders and your whole upper body coming up a little bit. And then with the out breath, you can relax the whole upper part of your body as well. Let the shoulders come down. Check your hands, because your hands are important as well. If they're too close or too far away from the body, then you're going to have tension on your shoulders. So put them in a nice position for yourself where it feels like there is no need to hold up your shoulders. You can put one hand into the other, or the fingers can just be touching, or you can put them on your sides, whatever you're comfortable with. Just when you take a deep breath and the out breath, you have the feeling that the shoulders can relax. And this few relaxed in and out breathing exercises should put your neck in the right position already and your head. And it's in that position where this breathing just flows almost effortlessly. You feel if your head is too far forwards, it's more trouble, and if it's too far leaned backwards, it's more trouble. And if the breathing is just controlling the tummy and the upper body and the shoulders, then the head falls into the right position where it's comfortable. Obviously, you can always come back in your breathing, just give it a controlled breath, and then in the out breath you can always relax the body again if you feel tension coming up. And sometimes that happens during the meditation that you were not aware that there was still holding on, and there's, oh wow, and the shoulders have come down even more. Or the neck gets a little bit more relaxed. So sometimes that needs a little bit of time. So important is that you hopefully don't become less relaxed than you are right now during the meditation. If you find that is the point, then there's obviously something there that wants something. You want it a bit different. Are we fighting something in our head or in our body? And I just like you to be as kind as you can to all of us here in that room and to yourself for this half an hour. For that you can check your facial muscles and just, if you feel tension there, give it a kind smile. Give that moment here a nice smile. Give the people here a smile. And then when the smile fades away, sort of usually a very relaxed mouth. And your eyelids are just resting gently. And that happens if you check your forehead. You see if there's any tension in the forehead, and just give it a nice breeze in and out, and then the eyes and the forehead can relax. No need to figure anything out. Nothing right or wrong with that moment. Just give it some appreciation. We have this beautiful air-conditioned room here. We have chairs to sit on, and it's just all there for us. We have the people around us, all on their own journey, but tonight we go this half an hour, we go together. Take ourselves a little bit back. And just spread a little bit of kindness into that room. And kindness is more than a sword. If we make that strong, that can become a very bodily experience. Just this feeling of no judgment, a little bit of gratitude. All in our troubled, stupid minds with stupid problems. And there's still this space there that we can just send out that kindness. And it's not just for the others. I'm so open and relaxed. Now we can check. How do we feel right now in that moment? Is there anything missing? If we're comfortable with ourselves, then the mind is not going to move too much. I'm alright. I'm happy where I am right now. Then you will see that your thoughts are going to die down. Because there's nothing to figure out. Past is not interesting. The future has nothing to do with that what is going on right now here. And if we give words to what is happening to us right now, then we're going to change it and we're going to just proliferate us into a certain reality again, like we always do. So we don't even need to do that. We can just experience it. If the mind wants to make comments, fair enough. That's just background chatter, not important. Just this knowledge that can live without having to do anything. Body does the breathing all by itself. We can just watch. And take our fingers off the wheel and everything just continues without us. Perception still goes on. And you see, if you can just have this kind watcher in the background, just this interested with and happy with whatever is going on. Doesn't need to be anything special. Doesn't need to be free of pain. Doesn't need to be completely still. just watching kindly.
going to ring the bell 3 times, and after the 3rd time, please open your eyes and we end the meditation for tonight.
Do you want me to talk about anything in particular? Or you want to ask questions? Or do I have to come up with something?
What about pain in meditation?
Bodily pain?
Yeah, bodily pain. Yes.
So bodily pain in meditation, obviously we do the best we can just to make it as comfortable as possible. But pain makes it more difficult to keep a wholesome mind state. So it's more difficult not to get negative with the pain, because in the meditation usually we get even more aware of the body. Often with pain it's very pleasant to do something completely different that takes the mind away from the body. But in the meditation we go into the body, and if there's strong pain already, that is obviously we're going somewhere where it feels even more unpleasant than before. So I think the best thing is to try to make the mind as strong in positivity when you do the meditation. First of all, use the posture obviously where you're in the least possible pain, if it's lying down or whatever, or your super comfy chair or whatever. Then a bit extreme, take your usual painkillers or whatever you have to do. Especially if it's something chronic, where you take regular medication or whatever, just continue taking that. And often people say, yes, go into the pain and go right to the center of the pain and whatnot. I find that myself often very difficult when I'm in pain. So to bring up the kindness in the mind already, and if you can center that somewhere else in your body, we talk of loving kindness, for example. Loving kindness is not a thought, it's a feeling. It's somewhere here. If you can bring that up strongly already, before you completely go into the area where it's painful, then you can take that loving kindness and then put that exactly there where the pain is.
With the breathing of the stomach out and in, is it because as we get older that we get very lazy? Because what I have heard actually, that babies when they are born, their breathing comes more so from their stomach area. And when you were telling us about meditation, you were saying you take a breath in, but your stomach goes out, and then you release the breath, and your stomach releases.
That is, I think we're just usually not aware. We can breathe very shallow during the day. But if we sit comfortable, if you just have take a normal deep breath in, you fill your lungs as much as possible. One breath comes out. It's a natural phenomenon. Huh? It's not that I press my stomach out.
Right.
The lungs fill up, and then what is that called in English? Forgotten that thing that diaphragm. Exactly. Okay. Thank you. And that is basically the pushing up, and then the stomach comes out because there's more volume of air in the body. So it should never be forced. We can, the only thing that's nice to do this forcing maybe two or three times to fill yourself up more than you would usually do, because we get a better feeling of what is, how far the body extends, and then in this breathing out, it's beautiful to relax. And to relax that body. So it can be very frustrating to meditate with pain. Mm-hmm. So obviously this we have to use the wisdom that we have. What the beautiful thing teaches us is the body is not really ourselves. Mm-hmm. If we could tell the body what to do, we would say stop pain. But it's basically just acting to its conditions, and obviously the Buddha calls it, he has a simile with the two arrows. And one is the pain that the Buddha had as well during his life here as a human being. He had still back pain and whatnot. That is definitely in the suttas. And he sat in the sun for curing his back pain, making it better. But this second arrow that comes up, and that is the one we can work on with our wisdom, and that is the negativity that comes up. Why me? This is so unpleasant. I don't want that. And all the mental suffering that can be caused by that pain. And the more wisdom we acquire, hopefully the less we have this mind that wants things differently from the way that they are, because the mind realizes I'm just making it worse. I'm not making it better like that. It's basically the body's tensing up even more when I start complaining, when I start fighting. So, and then maybe that realization comes, the more I relax and really manage to relax the body, there is a relief to the pain. There is a relief to tensing up with that pain. But sorry if you are in pain. It's more difficult.
Yeah, no, it's especially I find that it's more of an anxiety, and it's sort of shifting the pain, trying to alleviate the pain that actually evolves when I meditate, and the voices that come to like a distraction within meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like I have to, voices seem to come into one's mind, and I've got to sort of say or relax. Don't let the voices come into you, like it's like a distraction. The mind is not silent, it's not quiet.
We all have that, yeah. It's just thoughts.
Yes, just thoughts, yeah.
And yeah, to keep that friendly attitude with the source, that is where basically the second arrow can come in, you know.
Right.
If it's like, oh, you stop, quiet.
Yes.
Oh no, not you. Not you again, actually, you know? And that can bring the tension up.
Yes.
You know? So the only problem is then basically just, oh, that's okay. Ah, you again, hello.
Yeah.
What have you got to say today? So then listen. And that thing can take the tension away, because often then people, oh, now it's meditation time, now I have to be in the moment, and then they create new tension again.
Yes.
Yeah? That's what I try to tell people: watch not your thoughts, watch your attitude in the mind. Yeah? If that is still kind, if there's still some power of kindness in your mind, you will be alright with what is coming up. And it will get more quiet, because the more beautiful it becomes in your mind, the less the mind is interested in thoughts. I mean, from your experience, if you were ever in love or whatnot and had the greatest sex in your life, is that the time where you think the most, actually? That's really sad, then. Yeah, some people, they can never stop thinking. But even then they have to control it. Oh, not now, it's too early. That's usually the man's job, actually. Or when it's something really beautiful happening, if you're on holiday or what, and you're in your favorite spot, and you're watching the ocean or the mountains or whatever, you have these moments there where it doesn't need to be anything more, and you feel at home. Huh? That's that place of where the meditation should be. Huh?
Yes.
This beauty, this not lacking anything anymore.
Huh?
And then the mind stops looking outside so much.
Yes.
And that is a lot harder, actually, when one is in pain, because then one is constantly struggling and maybe I sit a little bit more like that, and maybe I shouldn't do that, and I'm doing this wrong again, and I should exercise more, and maybe my pain medication is wrong, and maybe I should try another doctor, and I never listen, and then whoa, and all this proliferation about changing this circumstances starts again. And there can come that wisdom where one sees, oh, I'm just causing myself more suffering again. Instead, you don't have to do that, my lovely mind. Just relax.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, hello.
It's probably a really straightforward question, but where do you learn stuff from?
I try to talk from my own experience, basically.
A lot of stuff we're hearing is like, it's almost like it resonates off things I've done and things I've seen and people I've dealt with and stuff I've dealt with, and it seems so pertinent.
I was a sinner myself.
It's kind of throwing me a little bit, because I've been going in for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months or something, 6 months or something, and really enjoying it. And it's thrown me here with a lot of phases. I've got a lot of problems, yeah, but a lot of things I'm hearing every time I come here is things that you're saying. I'm going, holy cow, that's exactly what I'm going through, and that you're meant to be like, you know, Mr. Pure and Perfect.
That's just the image people project into you, basically.
No,
the lucky thing for me is I have nothing to do with that.
I'm sorry.
That would be so much burden on my shoulders. Yeah, but I know what you mean, but it's our minds are not so different. We're always dealing with the same stuff. We all were children, we have a body, we have certain mechanisms. We try to solve problems in the mind. We want to avoid suffering, we want to have happiness. I mean, some people are just a little bit more unskillful with dealing with their mind, and a little bit more unlucky maybe with the outside circumstances in this life, and obviously if we hadn't all that stuff in common, then we couldn't communicate and couldn't relate to each other. But as, because I know what goes on in my own mind, and I know from stories from other people what goes on in their minds, that I have a little bit of an idea what is the trouble for people in their meditation. And for Westerners, it's usually control. They want to fiddle around, and they just need to be a little bit stronger to get it right. Or this I'm not good enough or whatnot. This lack of confidence or whatever. And it's always the same crap in everybody's mind. It's always the same stuff. And the training is just to bring that up at the beginning of your meditation, this little bit of goodwill, then you see so much clearer when the mind drifts up into negativity or into controlling and ill will. So I try to do that at the start of each of my meditations, really to bring up that sort of, I want to sit now.
Can I ask you, can I ask you where you grew up and how you sort of came to be a monk? Was it hard?
Hard to answer,
man. Hard for you, yeah.
Not really. Well,
it would make a lot of sense to a lot of people, I suppose.
You want to hear my life story?
I don't think we've got like 3.5 hours.
Well, like a David Copperfield? Let's start with my grandparents.
Just an overview of where you come to, where you are. Is it hard?
No, I had a happy childhood. Pretty happy childhood. Cannot complain. But I always had an interest much more if to develop my own mind than fixing anything outside. That's, I don't know where it was coming from. I think since I can remember, since at least 16, something like that, was sort of this feeling that responsibility in my own mind, basically, if stuff doesn't go right. More of an unskillful mind than of circumstances outside. So sure, I still blame people when sort of something doesn't go your way. But there's behind that, I know actually I'm the one having trouble with that, and that was from an early age. And but I was a Christian, I was a Protestant, and until I came in contact with Buddhism, Jesus was my hero, basically. And but then with Buddhism, I just found that I came into the monastery the first time to visit my brother for his ordination, his monk ordination. That's when I got the first time into contact with Buddhism at all, and it was a monastery in the forest in Thailand. And culture shock, and it wasn't the most pleasant experience. I realized I don't want to live that life as a monk. But the teaching itself that I got there, not necessarily what the monks taught, but what I read about Buddhism, I found that very well explained. And sort of, I really like that idea. You have to figure that out for yourself. Can show you a direction, but if you don't experience that, it's worthless. So it wasn't just believing in some rescue someday from somebody. It was basically there is your mind, and there is a path. And if you make progress on that path, it should become happier in your mind. Should become lighter, should become more pleasant, and if you go far enough, hopefully then it becomes very, very pleasant, and suffering becomes sort of a meaningless concept for you. But that's what I haven't experienced yet. I just experience that there's cause and effect in my own mind. If I develop too much negativity in my mind, I suffer more. And there was relatively little encouragement in the world for that direction, and I wanted to go struggle in that direction, working with my mind. But I didn't find the setting in Thailand conducive for my mind. I don't like hierarchy very much, and there's a lot of cultural influence in the Buddhism there. And especially the Westerners, they mess it up in their own way, in my opinion, again, and basically trying to fit it in with the Thai culture and make something completely different out of it. And for me, that was something lacking there. Well, there was some sort of general element. It was much more this striving, yes, if you just had to be tough enough, and then you go in the Buddhist path. That's at least how it seemed to me. And the first time that I had the feeling somebody's talking about something different and something I had experienced, how to deal with my mind and how it becomes beautiful, was Ajahn Brahm. It came here, and then I decided that I'm going to give that a chance, actually, to ordain. And that's now 19 or 20 years ago. So it was this interest there, but it's also I was in the monastery 4 times before, and never wanted to stay. And then at a certain point, it just felt right actually to stay. I wanted to give it a try, and I knew I was living long enough in the world that I said, even if it's not going to be that great, I'm going to stay for 5 years. That was so my determination, but I didn't have to really push or whatnot. It was never that I was saying, oh, I really want to leave. But sort of after that, I didn't have to make new commitments or anything. It was just like, it didn't occur to me to go back into the world. But that's just my personal journey. Other people have their own journeys in the world, and I mean, you come here, I guess, to get some inspiration, get some perspective from what is going on in the world, because it is often not incredibly inspiring. It's just not. I always have this sense of, if you're not interested really in making money, having a great job, or in having children, there is not much out there apart from that. Maybe your hobby or whatnot, some people have. But this whole idea that we're with having an idea how the mind works, and the developing over our lifetime our mind either in a better direction or in a direction where we're going to suffer more, is not advertised here in the world. It's basically just having some external stuff actually which is supposed to make it better, how the whole marketing industry works, billion dollar complex stuff, where actually, or you actually who watch a lot of television, I don't see it much. It's encouraged to need more than you need. That's basically how the economy works these days. Producing shit that you don't need. And if that is not done anymore, the whole thing collapses. How crazy is that? So it's beautiful that these places exist where we get some other input. I didn't have that at home. I had some good friends who were also a little bit interested in meditation, but there was no pull in that direction, and the other direction wasn't interesting for me. So that's pretty much the story.
I have a question.
Yeah?
What's the protocol with the monastery if one monk gets a resentment at another monk?
Don't. Don't hit in the teeth. Spare the face.
So, do you have monk fight nights?
Right, fight clubs. 12 o'clock in the Dhamma hall. usually physical violence. Usually, at Kolinyana, I hadn't had that happen. Actually, I know of some monastery where it happened. Or someone you just snapped or whatnot. And it's usually the junior monks. Or whatever. There's a lot of tension in the monastery. You know, it's a lot more restrained. It's not that your beautiful qualities come up. It's basically your rage comes up because of the sense restraint. You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's usually there's more aggression coming up in the mind when you ordain. It's not that you put on your robes and you uplifted and get holier or whatnot.
Yeah.
It's usually, I mean, sure, the inspiration sometimes makes it better for a short while, but then all the old stuff comes up, you know, all your old craving comes up. So that usually brings up even more aggression. But if you do something wrong, is a good thing. It's always encouraged to ask for forgiveness later. Just acknowledge you did something wrong, and then the forgiveness goes obviously both ways. Because if you try to meditate with a mindset where you really hate somebody in the monastery, it's terrible.
Yeah.
You have to live with them every day. And if you don't like them at all, if you really have this physical aversion towards somebody, oh, it's so painful. You know?
Yeah.
So you have to get that right in your own mind, otherwise you're in trouble. And that is where we can then grow and learn a little bit. Huh? And just this seeing, why is that happening to me that I hate that guy so much?
Do you think it's something within yourself that when you don't like somebody, it's virtually looking at yourself and saying, well, that's me, more so than the other person?
First of all, the beautiful teaching in Buddhism for me is the non-self part. It's this, I'm not responsible for that business. And sometimes I cannot, I see somebody, I dislike him immediately. That's just the way my mind works. I don't know why.
Oh, you never looked into it?
Oh, it's basically I look then immediately into it, sort of, and don't believe it, you know? But it's still happening. Huh? It's somebody, and it's just like sort of whoa. But then it's what I try to do is at least don't believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
Huh? Mm-hmm. If the mind then tries to tell me, oh yeah, sure, look the way he walks, look the way he talks, look this. No wonder you don't like him. It's such an unlikable person. So that is where we can, or at least where I try then basically to set the limits for my mind.
Huh? Yeah.
Just like, do you really believe that? And if what you said, yes, I think I have that problem. It's not that if I try to change all the guys outside, I'm in trouble. Then I can stay in the world.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with those situations you just spoke of, is there a process within the monastery where, I don't know what you would call it, but some sort of mediated exploration of that experience between yourself and your mind, potentially the other person, and probably a wiser, more experienced monk to help guide you in that experience?
I mean, obviously Ajahn Brahm is always very inspiring in that direction. Right? There's even, what I found personally really inspiring is when that trouble was in Thailand about the Bhikkhuni ordination. Some of the people probably have heard about it. And is what we got basically kicked out of the community we were in, of the Wat Pa Phong community, because of that. And Ajahn Brahm was basically scolded when he was over there in Thailand, and some really unfriendly things were going on, some sort of, and things that don't make sense. And the way he dealt with that, was I never heard him during that, even I could feel that he was a bit upset, basically, you know, didn't, there was not was completely going through him. I could feel that he was really happy being home with us again, because of the friendship there we have in the monastery, and being just in a place where you feel with people that are nice to you again. But during all his talks afterwards, not a single time I heard him saying anything negative about the people over there, never trying to justify his own suffering in the way that you put down the people over there, huh? That they did something wrong, they did something to you, and they have wronged you, and blah blah blah. So he just needed, or didn't need it, needed that justification in his own mind. It was always positive, and seeing the Dhamma in it. And that seeing the Dhamma is seeing I am a being with desires. These desires are going to clash with the other people who have desires. It's just the way it is. This is not the happy, happy heavenly realm here, actually. There is suffering. Natural suffering, just living here on that planet in a body with other people. Unavoidable stuff. And just having that sort of wisdom just doesn't let you point outwards so much anymore. It always brings you back in. Where can I see that I'm creating that suffering in my mind? Because the people are going to be people. The body is going to be the body. It's going to hurt, and it's going to stink if you don't wash it, and it's going to go here and there, and never does what you want. And so it's with the people, so it's with the climate, so it's with everything else. And if you see where's the angle in the mind, where's the angle in the mind that is okay with that, what is going on? That is the path for me, not fiddling around on the outside. And obviously Ajahn Brahm is a very good example for that, because he also with the fighting or whatnot is this overlooking the faults of others. He's the greatest in them. Often I sit there and I wish that he would be stricter with people.
Do you have a set routine, like there's certain time in the morning you get up a certain time, you have breakfast together, or?
Yeah, we have the breakfast together. Before that, it depends on your breakfast is at 6:30 to
right.
Quarter past 7.
Yes.
If we're not there, then you missed it. And then there's the work session, work meeting, and then we work until 9:45. And then you can have a shower, and then the lay supporters are there already, and then usually the food offering starts around 10:40. And then afterwards, if you don't have any particular duties like cleaning the dhanasala, cleaning the room where the people eat up there,
mm-hmm.
or the upatak, that's the chaperone of the abbot for the junior monks, then it's free time. And it's a Wednesday night talk, and every fortnight is the Patimokkha, the recitation of the rules, and a meeting. And that's the schedule at Bodhinyana, but that can be completely different in other monasteries. It's basically the bell at 3:00, 3:30, sitting together actually, and then there's a lot of sitting and chanting together. So whoever likes that more, that sort of structure, Bodhinyana is the wrong place. You have to spend a lot of time alone. Sure, you can also run around and chat or whatnot and find distraction, but it's in general, you have your own hut, actually, and you just have to. If you're not happy by yourself, sooner or later you're going to have a problem.
Yes. What is the role of chanting in Buddhism?
Usually a lot of the chantings they do these days are combined stuff from a lot of is translation from the Thai chanting. It's not completely made up, but it's sort of they picked out stuff. They combine things from the suttas, and then but they also put on their own ideas inside with some of the chants, but in the original version is that the chants are the sutras in the from the they're basically the memorized version of the verses of the Buddha. Yeah? That's because they didn't write anything down. It's easier to learn it in a certain rhythm.
Yeah, but why do you have to say it loud? Can't you just...
Oh, you don't have to. I personally, I'm not into chanting myself at all. That's why I like Bodhinyana, and at other places you have to chant all the time, and I'm not a... I don't like it very much. But if you have a personality who is very devotional or whatnot, people love chanting. You know, they can really uplift their spirits with that. And often it's not because they understand what they're chanting, because it's in Pali.
Yeah.
But it's because they light their incense in front of the Buddha and they bow and they just make that a ritual to come home to something, yeah? And then they like their chanting, doing their chanting. And if you can develop wholesome mindsets with that, beautiful, do it. Huh? It's just not for me. You know? Whatever helps your mind to remember and go into a wholesome direction, use it. It's only sometimes when people start to believe that the chanting in itself is something super powerful. And then it becomes that superstitious nonsense again, basically. You know, that this is... This, if you sit there with a miserable mind, but you just do the 1,000 ETP source, actually, you know, Bakawa, and you hate it, and you're tired, and you think this is going to lead to anywhere great, I guarantee you, it's not going to happen. There's no heavenly father there who is going to bless you because you finished your 1,000 ETP source. But if you do it actually, and it's fun for you, and you that is your form of meditation, go for it. Beautiful.
So the words doesn't have an energy of its own, like that would, I don't know, like the certain chants or certain mantras may develop some kind of spirituality or.
If you have a personality like that, for me, never,
sorry,
it never worked.
Okay.
If I don't believe in it, it doesn't work for me. If you believe in it, it becomes part of your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, whatever you do with it has a completely different effect. I just have to deal with my character. And I'm a very...
Yeah.
I see myself as a very rational...
Mm.
character. I like to figure things out. I don't like to believe people.
Right? Yeah.
It's often I have a feeling people tell me something and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. So I don't have a big face character. So for me it's always very important. It has to make sense. It has to connect with something inside of me. And if that's not going to happen, I'm not going to believe you, actually. Yeah? And if meditation is not doing anything good for you, please don't believe me, and just stop.
Yeah.
Yeah? If that has nothing good for you, then run the hell away from Buddhism. there is no magic or whatnot. There's either something resonates with you, and you manage to develop something beautiful out of it, or you don't.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing for me in Buddhism, is that I don't have to convert you, I don't get extra credit for that. Yeah?
Your parents, are they sort of, when you and your brother, Do they like the Dharma now? Or?
No, not at all. But not at all is they're not interested in meditation or anything. But they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very moral, but generous and moral in a sense not sort of holier than you moral, a Christian, I don't know what, you poor sinner moral. It's basically just, but they just don't steal, they just don't take advantage of people, they're generous, they're kind to their neighbors and whatnot. So they just, by the quality of their heart, they just have a lot of wisdom and just not interested in that whole meditation aspect of it. But yeah, and that's far more important often for me than anything else, you know. You have people then who can be Buddhists or whatever they are for many, many years, but they're impossible people. Just like it doesn't help if you call yourself a Buddhist, or you're a Christian and you can be a horrible person, or you can be a really nice person, you know, and just lovely qualities, and just take all the best days from Christianity, from the Sermon of the Mount or whatever, you know, from Jesus. There's some beautiful stuff there. Are you an Old Testament guy, yeah? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
The New Testament.
You have an agenda, David. Big agenda. So we know all about that. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, if it doesn't make the mind more beautiful, if it's just an empty promise for somewhere in the future, I just don't trust it. I think that's how the world... there's a lot of damage done to the world with that nonsense.
Like that.
Yeah.
So did you study science? Or were you a scientist?
No, just normal in school. I wanted to study psychology, actually. But then before that happened, in the end, I ended up already in the monastery.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm still a little bit... I'm terrible at math. You know, I never liked math, but yeah, I'm interested in physics, but physics without math is completely hopeless. So I'm interested in what they figure out in physics, especially quantum physics. There was some real interesting stuff there.
But there is biology. There is
biology, evolution, whatever. Actually, that's I always find that interesting, especially if you can prove things. Yeah? But then there's science is often going in a direction where they don't have any proof at all in their next statements as well. Especially when they go into the mind realm. It's just like, oh, it's a fact that after the body dies, everything is gone, everything is finished. That is not a scientific argument. Yeah. How do they know?
I was going to say, what is actually the Buddha's belief actually when one dies? Is there, right? Do they... What's the actual belief? One dies and that's it, or is there something?
No. I mean, the whole point of developing your mind. Yeah. I mean, if it was for one lifetime, I always say, for me, then it's you either like it and play a little bit around, or you don't like it, and if you really don't like it anymore, you can just blow your brains out. If it was just for that. But the Buddhist thing is far more terrible. It's basically its desire is driving us on and on and on through one lifetime after the other. So it's basically the desire always finds a new transport, actually.
So it's like reincarnation.
Reincarnation or also other realms.
Other realms, right.
Non physical, or at least still physical, but not with a coarse material body, like some heaven realms, and
like
then
spirits.
Well, in Buddhism you have all sorts of different realms,
right? Okay,
like same as in Christianity, which I found very disappointing in the beginning. Actually, you still have hell realms, you have the ghost realm, you have the animal realm, and the human realm, and then you have what they call the realm of the four kings or whatnot. Is basically the central realm where people still have fun, just a lot more fun than with a crappy body, actually. But they still have a body,
yeah.
And they still have sex, and they still have, I don't know what they have, actually. It must be really nice, float around. And then there are the realms where basically the mind is not interested in having a bodily form anymore. And then it goes up and up and up. And but in Buddhism, the goal is in the end just to stop that cycle, because it's not an it's not a one way street where it just gets better and better and better. It can go up and then it can go down again. It can go up and down. That's basically the perspective of what happens from beginningless time. There's no start to the whole business, which is also hard to conceive, because it's a cause and effect thing in Buddhism, and there can never be a first cause. It's always the cause is always the effect, and the effect is always the cause. So it just goes round and round. So that is a Buddhist perspective, this sort of developing the mind, hopefully that it gets better for you in this lifetime already. You see that your suffering diminishes. But also to make your mind wholesome, that it's going to go to a wholesome place. If you have a really crappy, brutal, I don't know what mind, it's going to be go into an area where a crappy, brutal, and I don't know what people, basically. It's going to seek all the same vibes.
Yeah.
And if it's really wholesome and doesn't have this sense of regret and remorse, then obviously it can go into a realm where there's a lot more fun to be.
Yeah.
But the goal is to get out, to realize this non-self business, which is this perpetuating thing of happiness and suffering.
Yeah.
And if the mind doesn't see the way out, it's going to continue. So that's the Buddhist perspective. It's late already. It's half. Oh, that's not enough. All right, I think we have to stop. Thanks for your questions. And
thank you.
Maybe Doug has a few more announcements to make. Few announcements to make?
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Arjan, for your
You're welcome.
Talk tonight. And on behalf of the group, thank you. And hope we can see you again in the near future. Thank you very much. You'd have to excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold coming from this air conditioner.